And we'll open a public hearing on 595.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Patrick.
Senate Bill 595 allows the Director of the Department of Transportation to temporarily suspend one or more of specified motor carrier statutes during a time of an emergency. It limits the length of time the statutes may be suspended. And there's an emergency clause, the bill will become effective upon signature by the governor. No fiscal or revenue impact, and the Senate vote on this bill was 20-0.
Okay. Thank you. Mark Gibson? Mark out there, yeah. Oh, Senator.
You get a twofer.
Welcome.
Thank you. Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. For the record, I'm Betsy Johnson, the state senator from Senate District 16. Mr. Gibson has thoughtfully prepared testimony. I'm just here to be the cheering section and say great bill should pass. This bill and my interest in it stems from being 20 years in the helicopter business, and during that time we fought lots and lots of fires. And what has happened over time are the regulations for fuel truck drivers have become onerous to the point that it is conceivable you could have a fire burning with a helicopter and a fuel truck parked right next to it, and it could not perform on the fire because of duty limitations. What this bill allows is for the director of the Department of Transportation to suspend some motor carrier rules in the case of serious conflagration and in a time of emergency. What happens is that the helicopter gets to the fire first, begins work, the fuel truck comes later, the fuel truck will fuel the helicopter a couple of times and then sit on the ground waiting for the helicopter to finish its work. All the duty hours are accruing to the driver at that point. So at night, when it's time to go to the fuel depot to get fuel, the driver is out of time and can't perform. So you have a helicopter with no support mechanism out in the field. This bill will be incredibly important as I think the state braces in the wake of the drought for a bad forest fire season. And this bill, this piece of legislation, I think will be the greatest safety measure that the legislature can provide to make sure that the trained crews and the helicopters that are on site at fires can perform to their maximum ability in a time of conflagration.
Thank you, Senator.
Chairman Gilman, members of the committee, I'd first like to thank you for the opportunity to speak before you today. My name is Mark Gibson. I'm a manager of helicopter operations for Timberland Logging. I own Siskiyou Transportation, and I'm also on the board of directors of the Oregon Trucking Association and chairman of the legislative committee for the Helicopter Association International. In this situation, both the helicopter community as well as the trucking community sort of merged together. And as Senator Johnson mentioned, in January of 2004, the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration revised the rules for commercial truck drivers. Basically, they modified the rules in such a way that it greatly dampened the ability of helicopter support vehicle drivers to function on a daily basis on a fire. Under the old rules, a fuel truck driver was able to log that time spent, as Senator Johnson mentioned, in much of an off-duty status, basically in between fueling the aircraft and servicing the aircraft in whatever way that may be. That time was spent off-duty and was under the old rules. The driver had the ability to log that time off-duty. Under the new rules, that off-duty time went away. Basically, under the new rules, once that driver starts his duty day, he has 14 hours in which to complete that day, regardless of the amount of time spent on-duty or off-duty. What this legislation would do would give the Oregon Department of Transportation the ability to enact an emergency under the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Regulations clause in terms of emergency declarations. It would allow the Oregon Department of Transportation to declare that declaration and give a 72-hour period for which the governor to basically come forth and determine whether that declaration was going to be upheld or not. And what that emergency declaration would do would suspend the hours of service rules for fuel truck drivers. We're currently working on the federal level to try to make some change in the federal motor carrier safety regulations, but when that may happen is up to anyone to determine. So what this would actually do would at least give us some sort of relief for the state of Oregon. And in addition to helping to relieve helicopter fuel truck drivers during fire suppression emergencies, it would also allow ODOT the opportunity to declare emergencies in examples such as ice storms during the winter for the delivery of heating fuel for utility vehicle drivers in terms of restoring power after such ice storms, that type of thing. Last year, Senator Johnson, Oregon Department of Transportation, Greg Del Ponte, the Oregon representative for the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Representative or Safety Administration, Bob Russell from the Oregon Trucking Association, myself, all met with the governor's office and basically got the okay for this type of legislation. So therefore, it's my understanding that they're on board. And with that, I think I've spoke to most of you about this particular legislation, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Questions? Representative Hunt. Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Can you talk about the 72 hours? Why not a week? Why not 24 hours? Is that typically the time period during which the governor needs that much and always would have a decision made with that time period in terms of declaring an emergency?
The reason for the 72 hours is under these circumstances, we don't necessarily want an official governor declaration of emergency right up front. So the 72-hour period basically allows ODOT to make that declaration immediately. For example, if we're in the midst of a bad fire season, we can't really wait. If it's a Friday afternoon that we need a declaration, we can't really wait till a Monday or whatever that time period it may take for the governor to enact that emergency. Therefore, this would simply allow a phone call to the Oregon Department of Transportation to enact that emergency. The 72-hour period would simply give the governor the opportunity to make that official, I guess, for lack of a better word.
Let me try and rephrase it more clearly. Is there something magical about the 72 hours that, I mean, could it be a week? Could it be 24 hours? Is there something that gives you the assurance that that is both long enough and not too long?
My understanding is that 72-hour period is not a magical number. To be honest with you, Greg Del Ponte from ODOT is here, and Bob Russell from OTA are here. They could probably answer that better than I could. But my understanding is that 72-hour period is not really a magic number.
Welcome, Greg.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Greg Del Ponte. I'm the administrator for the Motor Carrier Division of ODOT. In practice, these kind of calls seem to always occur in the middle of the night, most commonly on a Friday night.
Okay.
And so 72 hours is the amount of time it would take for me to confirm with the governor's office, legal counsel, that a declaration is necessary.
Further questions? Yes.
And thank you, Mr. Chair. For Mr. Del Ponte, just to make sure that we're clear on this, under the federal motor carrier safety rules at 49 CFR 390.23, it does allow for declared emergencies and the exemptions, and specifically in those cases, the exemptions would apply to parts 390 through 399, which includes the hour of service rule. And just, I mean, what we're doing here basically is taking that same federal exemption and applying it in the state code as well. Is that accurate?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Burley, correct. The federal exemption is triggered by the declaration of an emergency by someone in the state that's empowered to declare an emergency. In Oregon, that's the governor, or there's a chain of successors if he's unavailable. It does not include ODOT, and specifically, it does not include me. So I have often been in the position on Friday night or Saturday morning at 2 in the morning to make the decision to allow the fire trucks to continue fighting the fire without having the authority to do so, or to tell them to wait until Monday. I've always made the correct choice and told them to keep fighting the fire, but I would appreciate not having the liability.
And I appreciate that. In fact, there have been cases over the last couple of years where resources have actually been pulled off of the fire because of some question about these exemptions and whether or not you need declared emergencies or not. But all I'm trying to establish is that what we're looking for here in the state law for exemptions is not anything broader than what the federal rules already provide for.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Burley, yes, to a point in that the federal regs are allowing the exemption of the federal regs. Most specifically, we're speaking of hours of service. But while we were at it, we included the authority to allow ODOT to waive other components of law that may be appropriate. In the instance of the ice storm, for instance, when power lines were down all over the state, we solicited utility trucks from neighboring states. We didn't want them to have to stop at the border and obtain registration and be weighed, et cetera. And so it includes those kinds of provisions at our discretion.
Further questions? No. Thank you very much. Anyone else to testify on Senate Bill 595? Close the public hearing on 595 and open work session on Senate Bill 595.
Mr. Chair, I would move Senate Bill 595A to the House floor.
Thank you.
With the due pass recommendation.
Representative Hunt moves 595 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Yes.
A great common sense bill.
Thank you.
Should we consider the consent agenda?
Yes. Hmm?
Consent agenda?
Oh, yeah, but we got it. Well, yeah. Yeah. Mike?
Representative
Thacker?
Aye.
Representative Byer?
Aye.
Representative
Boone?
Aye.
Representative
Burley? Aye.
Chair Gilman?
Aye.
Motion carries. Representative Burley moves that we place 595 on the consent agenda. Any discussion? Any opposition? Order. Okay. Patrick, 3374.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As you'll notice, I don't believe there is a staff measure summary in your folders for House Bill 3374. I was holding off until I received the amendments, which we just received, and Mike will hand those out momentarily. The original bill requires a person submitting title transfer application to the Department of Transportation to pay fees for previous title transfers that should have been paid, but were not. My understanding that the amendments that will be handed out shortly are a complete replacement of the bill, and I apologize, I have not seen those amendments as of yet. So I believe we have some people here who would be glad to talk about them, however.
Yeah, and that's where we are. Art, I think it's your turn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, my name is Art Slack. I'm with the Association of Oregon Counties. House Bill 3374 is a gut and stuff, and I have had the pleasure of talking with some of you. I apologize for those that I was unable to make contact with regarding the proposed amendments. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, basically what the Dash 2 amendments do is they place a 30-day residency requirement or requirement for somebody to title and register their car or vehicle in the state of Oregon when they move here. Currently, the statute is silent with regard to a specific amount of time that a person has to title and register his car. Some have interpreted that to be immediate. We would note that California has a 20-day requirement, and the state of Washington has a 30-day requirement. And so if you look on page 3 of the Dash 2 amendments in this section of the statutes, deal with titling.
you'll see the additions in lines 6, 7, and 8. And this section basically says that this section only provides for an exemption so long as the owner satisfactorily shows that the owner is not a resident of this state or has been a resident of this state for less than 30 days for the purpose. And then it goes on that the and refers you to ORS 803-200 for the residency requirement. So this is a very simple amendment, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. It makes us consistent with the state of Washington in terms of the time frame that somebody has once they move to Oregon or locate in Oregon to register and title their vehicle. We believe that this will help expedite people titling and registering their car once they realize they have a specific time frame rather than a rather more open-ended period of time. And based on the information that we received from ODOT and DMV, we would note that there's approximately 64,300 driver's license from out of state that are surrendered in the period 2003 to 2004. So that's a significant amount of out of state driver's license that are surrendered. Certainly correlates to a number of vehicles that are coming in to the state that need to be titled and registered in an expeditious period of time. So that's what the bill does, Mr. Chair. We've asked ODOT to be here to make a comment at this point. We urge that you endorse the Dash 2 and support the bill.
Yes, Dave Thatcher.
Thank you. What happens if they don't get it titled within 30 days? Is it mentioned in here?
There are other provisions of statute that impose a penalty, and Robin probably knows that better than I do at this point. I can look.
Chair Gilman, Representative Thatcher, that's correct. There are penalties for not registering your car. I don't have those right off the top of my head. I can get that for you if you'd like.
In the state of Washington, Representative Thatcher, and you may have seen in the local papers that over in Vancouver, Washington, they recently ran some sting operations to get people that had moved to Washington and still had Oregon plates. And their fine, I believe, is like $313. So it's rather substantial at this point. I don't know whether Oregon's is that high, but it is. You can be cited by the police officer for not registering and titling your vehicle in a timely manner.
Robin, I think before we go for more questions, let's hear your testimony, and it might answer some of those questions.
Good afternoon, Chair Gilman, members of the committee, Robin Freeman, Oregon Department of Transportation. We're simply here today to state that we do not have a problem with the Dash 2 amendments as they are drafted, and that's pretty much the sum of my testimony today. Thank you.
Robin, have you had time really to look at the Dash 2s completely?
Chair Gilman, members of the committee, there's just a basic change. It is exactly as Art has said. It's giving folks 30 days as opposed to there's a list of criteria in statute right now that if you meet that criteria, it's assumed that you will register and title your car in this state. And this just basically says that if you are a resident for 30 days, it gives them 30 days to do this.
Now, questions?
A question on a driver's license when somebody moves in the state, how long they have to do that. It's not directly related, but is there a synergy with that? Or?
Chair Gilman, Representative Bruin, there is a synergy. It's the same criteria are set for the driver's license for having the privilege to drive.
30 days?
No, it's if you are, it's all of the, actually, it's in statute, and there are criteria that you meet, basically, and if you meet those criteria, which is you're working You are gainfully seeking residence here, as in purchasing property, and you've been here for 6 months or more. That kind of starts the ball rolling. If you've enrolled your children in school and you aren't asking for out-of-state, paying out-of-state tuition, then those are the types of things that are listed in statute. You are considered a resident at that time, and you are supposed to have an Oregon driver's license and register your car in Oregon.
But, Mr. Chair, but there's no, on the driver's license specifically, there's no, whether it's 30 days or 6 months right now, there's no hard time criteria.
Chair Gilman, Representative Bruin, my understanding is no, that it's tied in with registration and titling.
Okay. Thank you.
Any further questions?
All right, you mentioned the 64,000 driver's licenses that were turned on. Do you have any numbers of how many vehicles were registered, you know, that corresponds with that number? I'm just questioning whether this is necessary.
Mr. Chair, we do not have data because DMV does not collect the data along those lines. I mentioned the numbers at this point to, I guess, provide some scale to what we might be talking about here. Bill, as drafted, will not create a whole lot of revenue or anything. It might help one time encourage somebody who is moves here with an Illinois license plate that, you know, won't expire for a year or a year and a half at this point, because there is in our statute a 30-day period of time. It will encourage them to do it and maybe do it sooner. So there may be some one-time small increase in titling fees and registration fees to the state of Oregon, but it's going to probably be negligible at this point overall. It won't be much.
Sam Burley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think both the questions that Representative Bruin and the Chair raised were ones I had, too, and I'm still not quite sure I've got a satisfactory answer. I'm trying to figure out exactly what is the problem we're trying to solve here. Furthermore, if we put in 30 days, I mean, if we're not having enforcement now, knowing that somebody still has met the criteria of 803-200, i.e. they're a resident, but 6 months later they're still driving on their own tags, they're the old ones. If we put this in, is that going to increase the enforcement any? And also, I want to go back to Representative Bruin's question and ask, if we're going to do this for registering vehicles, why don't we also do it for getting a driver's license?
Mr. Chair, Representative Burley, at least, you know, we did not look at a driver's license at this time. Certainly that's something that we could do next session. But we believe that this will encourage people, as, you know, with the 30-day time frame, for them to do it more expeditiously. Enforcement at this point is by the law enforcement officers. They could ask, and I don't know how often they do ask these questions, when they stop a vehicle without a state license plates. But certainly that's something they could do, and with the 30 days, it might encourage them to do it more often.
Further discussion or questions? Yes, Representative Thatcher.
I guess following up on Representative Burley's question, I'm still not quite understanding what the motivation is, what's the impetus behind this, what are we trying to solve? I hear encouraging people to title their plates here in Oregon, but I'm not sure what's the problem.
Mr. Chair, Representative Thatcher, again, it's encouraging people to do it sooner. I can only tell you from firsthand that I have a person that lives across the street from me, and he's lived here for about 9 months. He has two vehicles, he's a single person, and he has California plates on him. I'm not, you know, if I go to DMV and I was to ask how soon do I have to title my car in the state of Oregon, I don't think you're going to get a very definite answer. Putting 30 days in statute will provide then a definite answer. If I look at the materials that are handed out in other states, they specifically say the time frame that's within their statute. So that's what we're trying to do, is encourage.
Robin, would you like to respond? Or
Chair Gilman, members of the committee, you know, we just really don't have a position. We're neutral on this. We don't have a problem with this language, and that's really all I'm kind of prepared to say today. Didn't have a lot of time to think about this. So.
Yes,
really. How would both of you feel if we were to further amend this and include the driver's license also?
Chair Gilman, Representative Burley, we'd want to have some discussions about that and look at that. There may be some consequences that I'm not prepared to offer today, but I'd sure like to have an opportunity to think about that.
Representative Hunt.
Actually, I know this one says related to motor vehicles, although we do have another bill related to driver's licenses that's coming that may be a vehicle. But I would concur there seems to be a value in having consistency. Could you repeat? I was not quick enough writing down. You mentioned, I think, Washington was 30 days.
And California is 20.
And do you know Idaho at all?
No, I do not.
You know, other states, I think Colorado's got time limits and some others, which I'm not all necessarily opposed to. Man, you're making a good point here, but it's like if we're going to do it for one, let's do it for both of them. It seems rational to me.
Any further questions? Do you really want to ask
just
another
comment?
For you?
I am just at a loss as to what problem we would be addressing and if we would be creating more problems. I'm just not there yet, I guess.
I think we're through with the two of you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Anyone else to testify on 3374? That was the public hearing on 3374, and we'll go to a work session on 2608.
Mr. Chair, House Bill 2608. This bill requires persons to provide evidence that they are a citizen in the U.S. or legally present in the U.S. in order to receive a driver's license, permit, or identification card. Attached in your packets are the Dash 2 amendments, which these SMS as a reviews. I have not myself personally seen the Dash 3 amendments, so perhaps the chair could speak to the difference between those and the Dash 2s, sure, which are summarized on the staff measures.
Okay. The Dash 2 amendments provide for a driving only card, and the Dash 3 amendments do not apply to a driver's only card. Let's see.
Say that again.
Let me make sure I've got it right. Dash 2s.
You do.
Refer to a driver's only card or provide for one. The Dash 3s do not provide for a driver's only card.
That's, Mr. Chair, I'd say real quick for the committee to look to page 15. The upper part of page 15 will give the difference.
Yes.
On the Dash 2. Section 10 on page 15.
There's just one extra page or a page and a half added to cover the dash, driver's only.
If I may, then I believe then the summary of the Dash 2 amendments and the staff measure summary, striking the last two sentences, then would be a fair review. That would mean that the Dash 3 amendments require the Department of Transportation to receive proof of legal residence and federal identification number prior to issuing, renewing, or replacing any driver's license, permit, or identification card. To require the Department to verify Social Security numbers with the SSA and federal identification numbers of the Department of Homeland Security, and provides exemptions in cases where the Department has previously confirmed the citizenship or legal residency of the individual. Thank you.
Chair is ready for a motion unless we don't discuss. And I'll open it first to discussion if you just want to pop. Yeah.
Ma'am? First of all, I mean, I think there's two things to address here. One is whether or not we're doing 2608, and I brought this if we need to continue to discuss that. I don't know if we need to continue to discuss that or not. The second issue, this is from a personal consideration, and Chair, you and I have talked about this, and others have talked about this. Listen, if we could get this through clean and it passed the Senate clean and it passed the governor's desk clean, then great. I don't see that happening at this point. What I see happening and the resistance that I've seen has to do with the perceived economic hardship on the migrant community if we were to implement this without having this supplementary driving privilege card. I think of all the testimony, we heard a lot of testimony on 2608, pro and con, and I think of and sort of compiling, if you will, the con testimony. In my mind, once again, this is a personal view, but in my mind, the only con testimony that had any merit to it, or at least a substantial enough merit to consider change, was truly that economic hardship. And I think that driving privilege card gets at that economic hardship, if you will, and addresses that. Now, it doesn't make everybody happy. It's one of those things. This is the true legislation that nobody's happy. But I'm of the opinion that this passes the Senate. I'm hopeful, and Representative Hunt may want to comment on that. He and I had that discussion as well. It addresses some of the primary concerns and addresses some of both from the pro side and addresses some of the primary concerns from the con side. So I'm on record now supporting the Second Amendment.
The dash two,
yeah.
And the second amendment.
I like the Second Amendment as well. Guns, I think that's great, but actually, yeah, dash two.
Representative Bruin, can you just explain what you mean about the economic hardship piece?
When we had the testimony, you remember we had a packed committee room on the days we had that, and we heard a lot of testimony, but the testimony was, well, you've got people that need to get to their jobs. We talked about the agricultural community and the agricultural economy in the state of Oregon, and that was the biggest thing I heard, is that we heard two things. People are going to drive anyways, which I sort of disregard that. I mean, I think we have laws to have laws, and I think that's sort of outside the bounds. But the second one I heard was, hey, listen, folks are here. They got to get to their jobs, wherever the jobs are. And this, and we all, regardless of any other immigration sort of aspect, which I don't think we're in the position to address one way or the other, people need to get to their jobs, and we want to support that. We want people working. We want our agricultural industries, among other industries. It's not just that, but we want that to be supported.
I was thinking you were.
And you got
something to do with the putting this into statute would cause an economic hardship. I'm seeing what you're saying.
Yeah, it was okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yes, Representative Hunt.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I would generally agree with Representative Bruin. I think if we were to put something, and I haven't read all the way through the dash threes, but assuming I understand the dash threes, that putting that in statute might have that impact of economic hardship. I think not only on the workers, but actually on a lot of the growers and other folks for whom they work as well, in terms of limiting their ability not only to get to work, but actually to perform work. When we started having hearings on this, it was less than certain about whether the act was going to pass at all. It had passed the House. From what I'm hearing just in the last few days, that it seems it did actually pass.
Oh yeah, it's on
today, right?
Oh, excuse me, but
just today. So I think we're in a different situation now. We do have, as I understand under the federal act, 3 years to comply. But as opposed to fighting about it for 3 years, which would be another option, it seems like we've got a path here. And again, if we remember that today, there's no difference in the Oregon driver's license. There's no indication of any kind of there's nothing in it that would comply with this federal act. This would both get us into compliance. And even for those for whom this would not go far enough, it would clearly be a step in that direction. Without I think imposing undue hardship in terms of restricting the driver's abilities, both of the individuals and those for whom they work.
I'm going to go to staff side and then I'll come back.
Representative Fattel, didn't you have a question, Representative?
Yeah,
Fattel?
I do. I'm concerned that we're talking about a driving privilege card that expires on the holder's birthday on the 8th, calendar year after the year of issuance, rather than, I was led to believe that if we did something like that, we would have to deal with a one-year renewal rather than an eight-year renewal to be in compliance. Trying to find that.
You want to come up, Robin? Or not? Okay. Welcome, Lorna.
Lorna Youngs, administrator of the DMV. If I may help the committee, Mr. Chair, in reference to Representative Thatcher's question on the issue of compliance, if it's in reference to compliance with the Federal Act, the Federal Act allows for states to issue cards that do not conform with the Federal Act requirements, as long as those cards clearly state on them that they're not for the purposes of identification, and as long as those cards format make them clearly distinguishable from the regular driver license and ID card that's being issued. So the Act is providing for states to do something that they may want to do internally. But as long as it's clear that that particular card can't be used for the federal purposes.
And then the issue of the 1 year or 8 years?
Mr. Chair, I know that in the state of Utah, I believe in the state of Utah, where the 1 year, where a driving-only card is being used, I believe that they have tied it to just 1 year, which is maybe what is the example that's been looked at.
And our amendment says eight, doesn't it?
It says eight.
Yeah. So we have to work on that.
I don't believe that's right. And I guess I would, at this point, in my opinion, that we should go for just not trying to monkey with the Real ID Act at this point. We can add that on later if that's where, you know, the direction that we need to go. But it's my opinion, just go with the clean bill. Mm-hmm. I might be alone in this, but that's where I'm at on it.
Okay. Any now, Representative Burley.
Thank you. Representative Thatcher, when you say the clean bill, you mean without any amendments, 2608?
No. Oh, just without the driving certificate deal, especially not with an eight-year one.
-3 amendment.
Yes.
Well, I too, like Representative Bruin and others before me, I mean, one of the things that really did resonate with me, too, during the testimony was the question or the issue about the fact that they can get a driver's license. They study the manuals, they take the tests, and, you know, they at least go through the steps to be responsible drivers. And I think if we take that opportunity away, that's a downside to me. But I'm a little bit curious about the driver-only provisions in the Real ID Act, and maybe I just read the wrong version or something, so I'm going to have to do some more research on that, but I don't recall seeing that in there when I read it.
Mr. Chair, Representative Burley, what we have is the Conference Committee report, and in Section 202 of the Act, under sub D, little d, sub 11, there is a provision that states, in any case in which the state issues a driver's license or identification card that does not satisfy the requirements of this section, ensure that such license or identification card clearly states on its face that it may not be accepted by any federal agency for federal identification or any other official purpose, and B, uses a unique design or color indicator to alert federal agencies and other law enforcement personnel that it may not be accepted for such purpose. And that's in the Conference Committee version that was passed by both the House and the Senate.
Okay. Well, that's good, because that was not the one I read, and that's probably exactly why I missed it. So if under that Is it your understanding that we would not, as a state, be subject to losing any federal appropriations that, you know, because if you don't conform with the Real ID Act, you lose your federal dollars. So if we, when you say it doesn't conform, we're still conforming if we do the driver-only non-ID card under the Real ID Act. Is that your interpretation?
Mr. Chair, Representative Burley, yes, our interpretation thus far, a plain reading of the Act, that as long as you make the card clearly state on its face that it's not for identification purposes, and as long as the card has a distinguishing feature to it, that it looks different from your regular driver license or ID card, that card would be permissible within the state for the state uses. And also to clarify, this Act has no federal dollar penalty on it. If you fail to conform to this Act, your state's driver license or ID cards will not be acceptable in any federal facility, in any airport, in any federal government office. And so in order for this Act to be to go into effect, a state will have to adopt the provisions of it in order to move it forward, because it doesn't really place a direct, but it places an indirect burden on the state. Now, earlier versions of the Act required that states join what is known as the Driver License Compact, which is an interstate compact there, which we're currently part of, and there is a revised version of it. And that compact is what we use as a basis of sharing information between states on driver license records. It's to get at the purpose of one driver, one license, one record. Lacking a database for that, we use the compact to share information, and we honor each other's suspensions. And so a previous version of the Act stated that you must be a member of the Driver License Compact to be eligible for federal grant funding to help you implement this Act. Oregon already does have federal motor carrier grant funding that would enable us to connect with Social Security Administration. And we would have to examine all the ramifications of implementation of this Act to determine what we would need to do and what it would cost. But we need to review it, because we just pulled this off the Internet today. But it appears that that particular provision of being required to be part of the DLA, or Driver License Compact, to be eligible for grant funds is not in this version. But I need to verify that.
The question anybody even
no I just oh, I'm sorry. Excuse me, I think based on what she's saying, and the fact that language is in the conference committee report allowing for the driver only card, I would go along with the dash two amendments, but I want to make sure, and I want to read these, because I want to make sure that the other thing that I want to be consistent with is the timing. In other words, the expiration date has to coincide with whatever, and I'm not sure what's in the conference committee report with that type of language in there.
Mr. Chair, Representative.
That's a concern of mine.
If you'd like me to respond. There, Representative Burley, it is silent as to the expiration date of any card that the state may wish to create that's nonconforming for state purposes only. If, however, any card that you're going to issue that would be acceptable for federal purposes, that would meet the federal requirements, must have an 8-year expiration date as a maximum. So they do put a limit to it, but only to those cards which you would be petitioning the Department of Homeland Security, showing your program, showing what you've got in place in state law that says this is all the things that we are doing to comply with the Act, therefore would you accept our cards.
But does it require that if they're here on a one-year visa, legally present, one-year visa, that our Oregon driver's license that is now in compliance would have to expire at the end of that 1 year?
Mr. Chair, Representative Burley, yes. One of the provisions of the Act is to tie the expiration date of the driver license or ID card to the expiration date of the legal presence status.
Right. But if they're...
For legal presence.
Right, that's the key. That's why the driver-only card doesn't have any such requirement, because there's nothing to tie it to.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Now,
Well, the question was just, thank you, Mr. Chair. I understand that for the driver's license. Why the year as opposed to 8 years or 2 years or 4 years for the driving privilege card? And I maybe I'd ask Representative Thatcher, is Utah doing the 1 year? I know you did some research
Utah's
on that.
Utah's doing 1 year.
Do we know their basis for the 1 year time? I'm just trying to figure out why it would be 1 year as opposed to any other time period.
I think I might have a copy of it. I don't know what their basis is, but that is what it is.
I guess my point is, if we're going to do an amendment to reduce it from 8 years, which I would support, because 8 seems too long for a sort of a temporary or, you know, a privilege card, is 1 too short, is my question. Is 2 closer? But if there's a basis for it, just some sort of logic behind it.
Well, there might be some written in their testimony record, but it's not indicated in their law.
Okay.
But you just think about it. I mean, if the maximum that a person that doesn't have... If you provide a visa, I think they're usually good for a year. And if you're tying a license to 1 year, I mean, it just seems it'd be more consistent to make it a year for both types of licenses. If you're here, you can prove your lawful status for a year, and you get a license for a year, and then on the other hand, you can't prove your lawful status, and you get a driving privilege card for 8 years. It just seems a little...
I think we're all agreed 8 years is too long. We're just trying to figure out where it should be. Should it be 1 year or 2 years? Or, Representative Plant.
Am I correct, Lorna, that in terms of Section 10, Section 10 really could say anything in terms of what is in there, except for lines 27 and 28 on page 15, which is that a public body may not accept a driving privilege card as proof of identity of the person. As long as, am I understanding correctly, as long as that's in there, that's what makes it comply with the federal act. The rest of it could be any set of requirements, any set of components, any set of timelines.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hunt, that's my understanding from the reading of the conference committee bill, that as long as the card is very clear on its face in terms of words and in its design, that it is not your standard driving card, your driver license or ID card, then you can have it expire in any cycle you wish.
If I could follow up, Mr. Chair, more a comment. I think the flip side of the timeline, I mean, if we dropped it from 8 years to 1 year, let's say, I assume the fee would therefore have to drop down by some kind of similar proportion. Because I assume we wouldn't want to charge, it would seem unfair to charge a person for a 1 year driving privilege card the same fee that we charge somebody for an 8 year driver's license. So I'm actually worried about the fiscal is going to blow up significantly because the department will obviously have to be renewing these with much greater regularity. I really don't have a fiscal impact here, so I don't know what we're even comparing it to, but I assume that would... Is it a fair assumption there would be a significant... Whatever we dropped it down to would increase the fiscal for 8 years.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hunt, you're correct that we would... It would have a fiscal impact because we would need to... see the person again and review their documents again and verify they are who they say they are again. But we're talking about approximately 2.6% of the population. So I don't know the size of the, at least that is what we've been basing our fiscal impact statements on, is the 2000 census figures for estimation of the populations that are undocumented here in Oregon.
I have a question. And do you have any ballpark fiscal on the Dash 3 and the Dash 2 amendments?
Mr. Chair, we have a ballpark fiscal of about $750,000 for the Dash 2s.
Dash 2s are three-quarters.
With the recognition about a quarter of that, it would be coming from federal funds. So the net to the state would be about $500,000.
Really?
Because, as you recall, we have gone to Ways and Means to apply for a federal motor carrier grant to to connect to the Social Security Administration. And we had applied for that grant 3 years ago. Were unable at that time to obtain the authority from the legislature to expend it. And as it turns out, it is still sitting in the bank waiting for us. So our connection to Social Security Administration is essentially paid for as soon as we have the authority to proceed with it. So it really is taking a look at the fiscal impact of connecting to the Homeland Security for INS verification and the additional personnel in the field offices in order to process the additional work. Without the DASH, with the addition of the driver privilege card, we estimated that it would take approximately 7 FTE. Without the driver privilege card, that would drop a couple of FTE off because there would be that proportion of individuals that we would no longer be issuing driver licenses to at all, or ID cards to at all, let alone doing the additional verification on. So the primary differences between the two would be in the personnel side of it and the additional, not major, but some programming requirement to create the driving-only card itself. But other than that, we're still, all the other costs are the same, the cost to connect to Social Security, the cost to connect to the Department of Homeland Security, and the cost to do the programming to tie the driver license to the end of stay.
Thanks, Lorna. Question, Representative Thatcher, and then we'll get Representative Crump. I'm assuming you're here to talk. You're next.
Well, going back to the issue about whether a card is issued for a year or 8 years, I assume that when you come up with your fees to get a license, you're covering your costs. So when somebody pays for it, it's supposedly covering, it's paying them back. I mean, it's self-renewing, I guess. Unless I'm incorrect here, that you lose money every time you...
Mr. Chair, Representative Thatcher, you're approximately correct. There's the initial upfront cost, which is the most expensive portion of it, which is to go through the testing, through the verification, et cetera. And thereafter, you have, in essence, a carrying cost, which is the cost it takes to continually to enter things into your record, to issue actions against you, et cetera. So we build all of that, if you will, into the driver license fee. So if you are on a shorter renewal cycle, you're not going to be charging the same amount of money, but the true cost of having someone walk into the office and physically present information again and go through a process, it's less than the initial one, but it's not the same as if they did it only once every 8 years. It will be more expensive.
And I didn't hear what the fiscal would be, the ballpark fiscal would be on the Dash 3s without the driving privilege card.
Mr. Chair, Representative Thatcher, it would be the difference primarily between the two FTE, so probably about $100,000 or so less.
You wouldn't have the difference of the setup cost of a new card in the Dash 2?
Representative Gilman, Representative Thatcher, in our driver license agreement with our supplier is the requirement that they be able to issue more than one different kind of card. So to some extent, we prepaid for some of that establishment, and then the programming portion of it is not a very significant cost. So we're still refining those costs, but we're not looking at a huge difference in terms of developing that card. That's not a large component of it. And I'll need to get you the details on that, break that out. But so that one of the primary differences would be in how frequently you see people, how many people you see, the personnel costs.
Okay. Thank you, Lorna.
Okay.
Representative Krupp, are you ready?
Welcome. You're smiling. That worries me.
Oh,
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, it's my pleasure to be before you today, State Representative Jeff Krupp, House District 17. And I think the reason you're smiling is I thought that I would not have to come show up here today till the staff come running down to the stairs a few moments ago and saying that you were talking about an amendment to this bill that I am passionately opposed to. And that's why I'm here. The intent of the Real ID Act is what you really should consider, in my opinion. There's a reason that Congress passed it. There's a reason it passed the U.S. Senate unanimously. And that is to accomplish certain things, but most of all to send a message that this country will no longer tolerate a system that allows individuals to operate within our borders who are not who they say they are. And what worries me about the concept of adding a driver's privilege card or a driver's certificate or whatever you say about it, whatever you want to call it, is that ultimately it achieves nothing. And most of all, it damages the intent of what we're trying to achieve, the intent of this legislation, the intent of Congress. People who are here illegally will drive illegally whether they have a driver's privilege card or not. And they will not have insurance, or they may. Nothing will change if you do this. In fact, I think ultimately it will backfire, and I will tell you why. Because I think that certain individuals that are here illegally will not want to be identified as not being legally present by obtaining the card. I think that will not serve us well. But most of all, I think it destroys the intent of what we're trying to accomplish with this legislation. And that is why I oppose it. We must follow the intent of Congress. We must follow the intent of the bills that 2608, the bill that I drafted, the companion piece, 2947. And that is to verify individuals to the best extent that we can, to be who they say they are. If you want to come to this country, if you want to drive our vehicles, you need to represent yourself to be who you are. And to say that, okay, if you're not here legally, it's okay for you to go ahead and drive, means we've just nullified everything we've done over here. Because we're saying you need to abide by our law. We're a nation of laws. And oh, by the way, but we'll let you go ahead and drive anyway, even though we know you're not abiding by our laws. I think that's a very mixed message. And I have difficulty understanding why we would entertain that as a viable idea. And that, Mr. Chair, is the bulk of my testimony. And I'd be happy to debate any of you or just answer questions thoughtfully.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Any questions?
Yes, thank you, Representative. I appreciate what you're saying, and once again, you know, I don't know if you did hear some of the testimony.
I did not. I'm sorry. I was in Ways and Means Subcommittee.
I made a comment that I think if this could be a clean bill, great. But you know, we have the issue of the political reality, which is getting it past the House floor and getting it past the Senate and getting past the governor's desk. I could be wrong in my analysis that maybe it could get through absolutely clean. I don't think it does. I could be wrong in that, but I think it has a much better chance with this. My personal reason, I want you to, if you would, address this. My personal reason for supporting this driving privilege card, or whatever we want to call it, is the economic detriment that not having a driving privilege card would cause the immigrant community in Oregon, mostly staffing our agricultural industries. And just to give you a little bit of background, our committee room was absolutely full with people with immigrants that were and their spokespeople were saying that this is the number one hardship. This is the reason you shouldn't do any of this. And I don't think they wanted this. They wanted full. They wanted status quo. But the number one reason they listed as a hardship, at least to my mind, was the economic hardship that this will cause hardworking people in getting to their jobs.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Bruhn, good point and a valid concern. I would go back to the issue of that many of those folks are driving illegally today. About a month ago, I took a ride with one of my state troopers who is a constituent of mine, and our last stop of the evening was an arrest of a gentleman who had no driver's license. I do not know if he was here legally or not, but he had absolutely no identification, was driving someone else's car with absolutely zero driver's license. I don't buy that for a minute. It is a concern that is valid in that it makes sense that if you were going to abide by the law and be able to drive to work legally, that you would go ahead and go through the process of obtaining a driver's privilege card. But if put yourself in the shoes of an illegal immigrant, do just think in your mind, do I really want to announce myself to the world or the state of Oregon that I'm not here legally? Do I really want to put that kind of a bullseye on me? I think that will act as a disincentive. I think by the very virtue that you're going to do, that we're going to do any of this, and we have to do this because the federal government just said we had to. By the virtue of the fact that you're going to allow a driver's privilege card isn't going to change anything. They're still going to drive illegally, and I don't think they'll do it. I think you'll have more people driving illegally any way you look at it. And Congress has set the course here. I think it's the right course. I agree with it. But, you know, if you're going to go to work, you're going to drive illegally. If you're going to drive illegally, if you're here illegally, that means you're violating our laws. You know that when you come into this country. And if you're willing to live your life on that basis, working here, then what else can we entrust you with? So we give you a piece of paper that says you can drive legally even though you're here illegally. I just don't think that many people want to expose themselves to that. And I think that will be an eventual outcome of offering that as a potential service. I just don't think it's going to make any difference. I don't think it'll help.
Any further questions? Yes.
Well, just a thought that goes through my mind. I know that I sit in judiciary. We talk about all kinds of instances where we're going to suspend people's licenses. And I imagine the same thing applies there. When people's licenses are suspended, they probably have some jobs they need to get to. And they find a way. They find a way, or sometimes they do just end up driving anyway. It's just a reality when, you know, there's legal ways, or there's ways of having your license taken away, or you not being eligible for a license here in Oregon. And now, I agree with the representative that I think we might be inviting some other unintended problems.
Another question, huh?
Just a further reflection. First of all, before you ever presented, probably heard some testimony related to the conference report of the Real ID Act, mm-hmm. as it just passed, mm-hmm. which does have some specific language that talks about allowing the states,
yes.
to do things like this.
I think that's a mistake, Mr. Chairman, Representative Hunt, but that's my opinion.
Yeah, but in terms of being consistent with the intent of Congress, clearly part of their stated intent was to allow states to do this. So I think the Dash 2 amendments are completely within the intent. As I look at the driving privilege card, at least as the language is in here, it doesn't say that the person has to be illegal. It's just that they're unable to meet the requirements for proving that they qualify under the main driver's license. That could be, you know, my grandfather who was born in Italy loses his naturalization papers. He could well be in the same situation. It's not that he's necessarily here illegally, it's that he is unable to prove his legal status. And so for us to say to the whole agricultural industry in Oregon, the farmers and their employees, that you're either going to have to stop driving or... I mean, the three choices is, well, since as a state we don't have an immigration enforcement wing, we don't have the option to ship people out. The real two choices we have to present to them are, you can drive legally but not have the full status of a full Oregon driver's license, or you're going to have to stop driving. Therefore, I think completely cripple those individuals and those industries.
Representative, I have one question. We've got two parts of this body.
Yes.
And we need to get legislation through. And my concern, or my question to you is, if that's the Dash
-3 amendments that you're supporting.
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
If we were to pass those and then they died in the Senate, which I think is a very good likelihood, and we wouldn't have anything for two more years, is that preferable to have it a driving only card?
Mr. Chairman, another great question. The reality is, in my mind, that if you pass that over there, I believe that they would, the Senate would have this very same discussion in Senate Transportation. And it is my guess that there would be the same amendment offered on the Senate side. And I do not know the fate of it in the Senate. I don't know if that Senate committee would say the -3s are appropriate or the -2s are appropriate with a driver's privilege card. I've not worked that issue on the Senate side, Mr. Chairman, so I can't offer you a definitive idea as to whether it would or would not. I think what is important here is that this is about message. This is about perception. This is about standing for accountability. This is about saying that our laws mean something. This is about saying that our actions have consequences. That's the message that we're sending by doing this, and I believe that's the real message of the Real ID Act and why it passed Congress. It is more than just, and Representative Hunt is correct, Mr. Chairman, it is more than just the illegal immigration issue, because there are others who may not be able to prove agreed. Okay? I think they are a very small portion of the individuals. The real problem we have today, and everyone knows it, let's not dance around it, is illegal immigration into America. It is a huge issue. And somehow we have got to get our handle on it. Oregon, as you know, has been an absolute target for illegal activities of false driver's license. We know that. We know that Nevada does not accept ours any longer. So we must do something. The federal government now has stated that, in fact, you will do something. Or you cannot use your Oregon driver's license as a federal identification for a number of purposes. They haven't threatened to pull money away from us yet, but I would think that that probably would come down the road. If this bill were to fail in the entire legislative session, if you were to send the -3 amendments, which I would urge you to do, over to the Senate, and they would say, no, we want to kill the bill as it is rather than try to amend it, because I think there will be a lot of pressure to try to amend it over there. I think the same individuals that you have heard from that have testified before you will go to the Senate Transportation Committee and will say, we think you should add the driver's privilege card in. I think you will have that debate over there. I do not think it will die. I think everyone recognizes, had the Real ID Act not passed, I would say, Mr. Chairman, that probably, your scenario would probably be more relevant and may occur. But now that I think everyone recognizes we have to do something. You've heard from Director Youngs. I talked with Robin Freeman, her legislative liaison, earlier in the day. And they have a long list of issues they have to comply with. I know they've articulated that to you. That's going to take time. So I think everyone recognizes we have to do something now. Again, my point in coming before you this afternoon and sharing my passion about this is that America is a lot about symbolism. And what message do we send if we say, on the one hand, we want you to be a legal citizen to obtain the privilege of driving in America. On the other hand, if you can't prove you are, it's okay to do it anyway. There's no consequence to that action. I think that's wrong. I think it's the wrong message. I think it's the wrong message when you send that to your children when they're young and you're trying to discipline them and give them parameters. I think it's wrong for us to say that as a society and as a government policy. And that, Mr. Chairman, is why I would urge you to accept the -3 amendments, please.
Thank you, Representative. Any further questions? Thank you very much. Representative Burley.
Well, at great risk of taking it one time. I love this debate. I mean, this is such a fascinating topic. And, you know, Representative, I absolutely share in everything you've said. And you're right, it's message and perception. But one of the things that I've grappled with throughout this whole process is, to the best of my knowledge, and I always reserve the right to be smarter tomorrow than I am today, but I don't think we have any immigration laws or any agency to deal with that in the state government here in Oregon. It's a national issue. Now, I think it's in some respects, it's kind of unfortunate that this is all being dumped on Department of Motor Vehicles. Okay? Which,
you
know, because the driver's license has the same, you know, connotation as an ID card. Now, the Real ID Act message is, if you're going to get an ID card in this nation that will work in airports and stuff, you got to comply with these standards. Now, obviously, Congress did that because if they tried to pass a national ID card, I think everybody would be coming out of the woodwork. So, once again, we're pushing this off on the DMV. My question is, are we going to turn DMV into the Oregon Immigration and Naturalization Service? Is it their responsibility to enforce federal immigration rules?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Burley, another thoughtful question, which you usually present to me at any committee I appear before you. The reality is, yeah, I see that as what Congress has directed us to do. Because the driver's license, you're correct, and I agree, Mr. Chairman, Representative Burley, it has become the de facto national ID card. I think just as much as any Social Security card or number is, it is what is used broadly for most identification purposes. And I don't see any way around that unless the debate shifts someday to a national ID card. And I think that your sense of that politically is that's not doable in America today. And so, yeah, it's unfortunate, and I think you're right. Your summation is absolutely correct. We are dumping all of this on the DMV. I wish it were different. I wish 9/11 had never happened. I wish I hadn't have had to see some of my constituents, like some of yours, die in Afghanistan and Iraq. But it's reality, and it's here. It's had to happen. We're having to move in this direction because I think America broadly has said we need to do this. And if that falls on the burden of one particular government agency, I wish it were not so, but it is, so be it. Let's help them deal with it as best we can, try to make it as workable as we can. And I'd be happy to do that in any way that I can. I've offered that assistance to the DMV as a member of Ways and Means, that if they need additional financial assistance, I'll be happy to advocate on their behalf to comply with the provisions of the Real ID Act.
Further questions?
Well, just comment.
Okay.
The risk of making this thing longer. Sorry, I don't see this as making the DMV become the, you know, immigration and naturalization or whatever ICE. I don't remember what it stands for anymore. But what I do see it as, you have to have these things. If you don't, we don't give you a license. End of story. It really doesn't have anything to do necessarily with immigration or not, because like you, Representative Hunt was saying that. Maybe his father, who's been here for a long time, lost his naturalization papers. Well, he would probably just have to find some way to get a duplicate of those before he could go back and expect to get a license. I don't see it as putting immigration issues onto the DMV. I just see it as tightening up what they can accept in order to issue a driver's license.
And in closing, Mr. Chairman, I would say, and to you and the members of the committee, I think you all have very thoughtfully considered all of the arguments here, and I would expect you to do so. And I'll respect your wisdom and your judgment. I may not agree with it, but that's perfectly all right. My wife and I don't agree on everything, and I doubt if that's any different in your home either. And that's okay. We can respectfully have differences of opinion and policy. Ultimately, the things that we do here that become law clearly affect people's lives. And Congress has set the path, and we have to best abide, I believe, by the path that they have said we must walk down. And we have to do that as thoughtfully and carefully as we can to create the least amount of negative issues that are out there while ensuring the maximum amount of positive issues and that positive outcomes from going down this road. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's been my pleasure.
Thank you, Representative.
Anything I can ever do,
you're welcome.
I'm
anytime.
Happy to come.
Yeah. Any further discussion?
Mr. Chair, thank you. I've been very quiet throughout this whole thing. as I'm listening to this, I'm thinking, I don't think I was here when we had the discussion on these bills. I think that Representative Burley and I were in Bend, or sisters,
on that day. But also in my ag committee, we've had discussions of these type of issues, not driver's license, but farm worker issues. And so some of these all start rolling in. I can't remember, you know, I think the testimony is very similar. I tend to prefer the dash two amendments over anything else. And besides the fact that I think everybody's right, the chances of getting anything else through is going to be very difficult. But I think we have an economy that really is very dependent on a lot of this labor. And not only hardship to the workers, but a hardship to the employers. And I think that we have to take that into consideration.
Further discussion? Okay, closed work session on 2608. And we'll start talking about something that some of you came here. You've learned a lot, haven't you, about driver's license? I'll open a work session on 2655.
After House Bill 2655 is the one that allows the Department of Transportation to issue group license plate for an organization that promotes prevention and suppression of wildfires. The dash one amendments, which are included in your packets, I believe we considered at the last meeting on the bill on the 29th of April, it directs that the plates issued to promote prevention of wildfires must bear the image of Smokey the Bear. That we have received a fiscal impact statement on the dash one, the measure with the dash one amendments, that it would have a minimal fiscal impact. I believe there have been some discussions, however, regarding the measure's subsequent referral. The measure has a subsequent referral to the Committee on Ways and Means, and because of the formation of the House Committee on Budget, if the committee is going to maintain that, we would need to rescind the referral to the Committee on Ways and Means and refer the bill to the House Committee on Budget.
Thank you very much.
And I should point out, I'm sorry, I should have mentioned this before, Robin Freeman has dutifully provided us with the story of Smokey Bear, so I'm going to hand that out while we're doing this.
Robin Freeman.
Robin the Freeman.
Oh, wonderful.
Right. We got a song, too.
It does say Smokey.
Nice. Thank you. Not at all. Oh, we got the song.
Can we sing?
No, we can't.
Debbie?
Yeah.
You do it?
Well, we'll have to rescind the voice.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Are you open to entertaining a motion?
Sure. We're just trying to figure out what it's going to be.
I would move the dash one amendment to House Bill 2655.
Representative Bruin moves the dash one amendments to 2655. Any discussion? Any opposition? Motion carries.
Does this have a referral?
It has a referral to Ways and Means.
Ways and Means.
We need to take that away and send it to Budget instead.
Okay. So I have to remove the Ways and Means. Mr. Chair, I would move that... first of all, I would move that we remove the referral to the House Ways and Means, House Ways and Means Committee on 2655. Okay. Then I would move House Bill 2655 as amendment to the House Budget Committee with a due pass recommendation.
Okay. Representative Prune moves the referral to Ways and Means be removed and that we pass the bill along to the House Budget Committee with a due pass recommendation. Comments?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Boy, I'm starting to get a reputation, I think. I think this is a great bill, and I'd love to support it. But I also participated last session in a bill that would help us clean up a lot of the obsolete, all the license plates and pare everything down. And I don't think I'm ready to start adding more to that list at this point. So I hope this is successful for you, but it will be without my vote.
Any further discussion?
Yes. Mr. Chair, for these handed out, for the, anyone who voted no had to sing this song.
Mr. Chair, I'm not sure you'd really want that. It might be more punishment for you than me.
Okay. Any further discussion? Patrick.
Representative Thatcher?
Aye.
Representative Byer?
No.
Representative Boone?
Aye.
Representative Burley?
Aye.
Representative Burley?
Aye.
Representative
Burley?
Aye.
Chair Gilman?
Aye. Motion carries. And Representative Burley, do you want to carry this on the floor?
Well, it's
oh, you can't. You might
I'll
be able
to.
You might be able to 100 years from now. Okay. Anything else? We're not, no meeting on Friday.
Okay.
And
we have the same schedule then on Monday plus the window.
Yeah. Yes, okay. You got it. We're gonna look at 2608 again on Monday.
Okay.
Yeah. We can do that, can't we?
Yes, Mr. Chair, we can.
We can
put a number request to the speaker to do that.
Yeah, and it'll have to. And of course, there's one more bill still sitting out there, that 3019. That's supposed to be. I think it's on for Monday.
It's on for Monday.
Okay. All right. This meeting's adjourned. It's been fun.
Holy.